every life transformed by medicine is a story. One that often begins with an investigator with a fresh idea. An idea that turns into a study and that ultimately advances patient care. Only innovation can truly help our patients live longer, healthier lives. Hello, my name is Dr. Kira O'Sullivan, and I am a breast medical oncologist at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. This is the monthly podcast of ACRU, the Cancer Research Network, whose mission is to establish the next level study for cancer research across the major disease groups. In this podcast, we want to hear the stories behind the innovative ideas and listen to the unique journeys of our researchers. Listen in as we explore the people and ideas of today's leading translational research.
Welcome to the ACRU Transformative Research Podcast. My name is Dr. Kira O'Sullivan, and I'm excited to host this episode as we explore the stories and innovation of today's leading translational research. Our special guest today is Dr. Daniel Flora, a medical oncologist at St. Elizabeth Healthcare in Kentucky. With a background in pharmacology, Dr. Flora has a special interest in personalized medicine, in which each individual's treatment plan is developed to minimize toxicity. He is currently leading the St. Elizabeth Oncology Research Team as principal investigator for multiple clinical trials. Many of these studies are exploring alternatives to chemotherapy, such as targeted or immune therapies. Specifically, he is currently PI for several breast, melanoma, and phase one trials, including an ACRU trial sponsored by Atossa Therapeutics. He is also interested in discussing barriers to enrolling patients on trials, technology and AI to screen for cancer studies, as well as how to engage physicians in the community to be involved with research. Dr. Flora is the recipient of the Arnold P. Gold Humanism in Medicine Award and the Cancer Family Care Unsung Heroes Award. Dan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Kira, for having me. Really excited to be here. I got a full cup of coffee and I'm already fully caffeinated, so I'm ready to go. So
Dan, can you please tell our listeners, first of all, what you're working on currently and what you're most excited about as a cancer researcher right now?
A lot of exciting projects going on. I think the hardest thing is when you have so many projects going on, how do you prioritize which ones are the most important, right? I think that's one of my biggest challenges, is just figuring out of all the things that are going on, where to invest your time and resources. So for me, we have a couple of projects that are really exciting, particularly revolving around incorporating circulating tumor DNA and how testing for ctDNA can help guide our treatments. So we have some projects we're working on in the adjuvant stage 2, stage 3 melanoma setting, all revolving around the possibility of de-escalating treatment, I should say, to hopefully avoid toxicity from some of the IO drugs. But, you know, I would love to see this moving and extending into the breast cancer population, which is another area of interest of mine. So those are a couple of the projects I'm working on. Also, recently, I've been really interested in learning more and hopefully getting more involved in how we can use diet and exercise as a cancer prevention method, really formally in the clinic with dedicated resources and plans. So I kind of have an interest specifically in cancer prevention. So a couple of projects we have within our integrative oncology center where we will hopefully be incorporating diet and exercise in cancer prevention.
I think that's just so important. And these are studies that really highly appeal to our patient population, especially our breast patients. So, I mean, I think, gosh, they sound great. We have an integrative oncologist here at Mayo, and it's been such a wonderful addition to the practice. So, very best of luck with all that. Regarding the current innovative trial you are leading via the ACRU, can you tell us some more about that?
So this is an exciting study. The national PI's Dr. Getz with Mayo, and he's been a mentor to me a little bit with projects such as this. So the study that we are bringing to St. Elizabeth and multiple other centers is a phase two trial. It's a non-inferiority study testing a novel SERM in premenopausal ER-positive breast cancer patients. Basically, the hypothesis is that we're looking for a more potent SERM that could have a better anti-estrogenic effect while avoiding some of the toxicities we typically see with AIs plus ovarian suppression, bone loss, and arthralgia. So I think it's going to be pretty important. I would say almost could be a landmark trial. That's really a proof of concept to see is this compound Z-endoxifen, which is a breakdown product of tamoxifen. It's probably a more potent molecule. So it avoids the CYP2D6 enzyme interaction with tamoxifen. So hopefully this would provide a more potent SERM and mitigate some of those toxicities that we all know can happen with AI plus ovarian suppression.
That's so exciting. And again, such a, you know, really relevant question for our patients as it relates to all the toxicities. And I think anything we can do to maximize, you know, all the options as it relates to targeted endocrine therapies, avoiding chemotherapy and so on is super important and really something that's so relevant for our patients. So thank you for that. As it relates to your, you know, your research focus, which you've really nicely outlined for us, what are the major challenges, do you think, in your area of research focus? And how are they or how should they be addressed in your opinion, Dan?
So many challenges with research. As you know, I specifically work in a community research center or a community oncology center. So it's a little different from our academic colleagues. So our challenges are a little bit different in community research. But I would say, you know, right now, our biggest challenge is staffing shortages within the research space. Turnover has traditionally been very high within research programs, and we've had a lot of challenges with that. So we're really trying to explore some novel ways to free up resources for our coordinators and research nurses. I'm happy to expand upon that a little bit because I think this is really an important topic for our listeners, you know.
Yeah, and I think it's so relevant. I mean, it's something that we certainly see here as well. So I don't think, as you say, it's exclusive to a community, certainly in the academic center. So I'd love to hear a little bit about some of your thoughts, because it's something I think that's really germane to a lot of community and academic researchers out there at the current time.
Probably over the last, I don't know, 6-12 months, we've really been exploring technology to see how this might free up resources. So we've interviewed and met with a bunch of technology companies focusing really on AI to help us integrate screening and pre-screening our cancer patients for trials. So as you know, there's a ton of these companies that are up and coming now, several startups in this space. And I think we're really just trying to figure out which one's going to meet the needs of our patients the most. We're not a huge program. We have right now in the range of, say, 25 to 30 trials. So we don't need a technology that's going to screen for 200 trials, but we do really want to incorporate pre-screening technology for our coordinators who, you know, they spend a lot of time with screening patients. And so we've interviewed a couple companies. I think some of the ones that our listeners may have heard of, like DeepSix AI, WCG has acquired them, I believe, recently, and they're going to be offering more solutions there. I've met with Massive Bio, which is another AI technology company that's helping to screen patients for clinical trials. And then there's a variety of other companies that are also in this space. So I think really leveraging this technology over the next, I would say, 6 to 12 months is going to be really key to help free up some resources.
I think that is just fascinating. And again, certainly I know the listeners and myself and others will be really interested to hear how that goes as it relates to the experience that you and your institution have with this, because it's something that's just so topical right now.
The other thing that we're really trying to leverage the sponsors. Some of the sponsors, one of the melanoma trials that were recently opened up, has offered to provide remote coordinator support. So if some of these things, you know, they could provide resources to help you know, either screen for trials or to do data entry, simply or talking to physicians to let them be aware of the trials. And this can be done remotely. So I know there's a company called 3Wire that's been, again, I think also acquired by WCG, that's looking at providing those, and the sponsors will pay for it. So they understand how important it is to free up resources so that we can run the trial successfully. These are just a couple examples of how we're trying to leverage that to provide support for our already stressed, and our coordinators are often pulling their hair out throughout the day trying to meet the needs of the patients. But ultimately, we could use a lot of support from the outside if that's going to be feasible.
As you say, you know, as the trials become exponentially more complex and there's so much involved with them and so much staff turnover and so much additional work for physicians and providers, it'll be really interesting to see how that plays out. So more to come on that, I'm sure. So Dan, of your many professional accomplishments, can you tell us which one you are most proud of to date and why?
My biggest accomplishment was really developing a clinical research program from the ground up at a community cancer center. So when I first started at St. Elizabeth, we had, I think, one or two research nurses, someone to help manage or direct the research nurses, but there just wasn't a lot of resources. That was about 5 years ago. And since that time, we've really worked with our administration and really changed the culture such that they understand the importance of clinical research in the community cancer center. So now we have a really robust infrastructure. We have 10 or 12 research nurses and coordinators. We have regulatory specialists, budget and contracts folks. We've really expanded this over the last 5 years. So I'm really proud of the team that we have right now. And I think looking forward to the next 5 years, I think now we have a really good base to start to bring some really exciting studies. So I think, you know, just this last couple of weeks, we opened our first phase 1 trial, which is something exciting for a community oncology program to have phase 1. And we really want to expand on that and bring some really exciting options for our patients.
That is an incredible accomplishment. And, you know, you make it sound so easy, but what are the things you think that really contributed to the success of building this program literally from the ground up to what it is today?
Honestly, I had some good mentors. We can go a little bit more into the mentorship, but I think several years ago, I got involved with an organization with ASCO called ASCO Research Community Forum. And we met at a national level in DC to try to get all the leaders in community and academic research to figure out what the barriers were to getting programs up and running. And so I was able to speak at a national level about how we did it at St. Elizabeth. And the core of what we did, it was basically engaging administration as well as engaging physicians. So that the key point was letting them know what the importance is and how it can actually really help the whole healthcare system by having patients involved with research. So I could go on and on about how it can raise the quality of your program. Certainly, I feel that physicians that are involved with research have a lower risk of burnout, which is huge right now. There's a lot of those things that we looked at, but I think really the key point to this is getting your, whatever healthcare system you work with, is really engaging the administrative folks and the physician leadership to understand the importance of it. I think the key point for me, every time I presented to one of the board of our healthcare system or even a physician who wasn't as engaged, is just to make it very personal and say, hey, have you ever had a family member who's been impacted by cancer? I certainly have, and that's what drives me every day. And I think when you really make that connection with the folks that maybe not have a great understanding of why we're all in this, without research, there will be no cure. And so I think that's just a point that you really have to drive in to the people that are worried about financial things. You know, research is not always a moneymaker for healthcare systems, to really engage them. And I think we've been really successful at St. E and have a commitment from our leadership to move forward with things like phase 1 and programs like that.
you've spoken a little bit about mentorship. Can you touch on that in terms of what it's meant for you and your professional growth as an oncologist?
I definitely want to give a couple of shout outs because without that mentorship, I probably wouldn't be where I am today. So when I was a fellow, University of Cincinnati at the time didn't have that research mentorship and really wasn't very involved with clinical trials. Felt like I got an excellent education in terms of taking care of cancer patients, but I really missed out on that. So when I went into community practice, one of my mentors, his name's Dave Waterhouse, and he had been doing community oncology research with Sarah Cannon for many years. And he said, hey, let me show you a little bit about what we can do in the community setting. And so Dave was really instrumental to me. He asked me to learn a little bit about becoming a PI. I took on a couple of smaller trials at the beginning, and then it just kind of blossomed from there. So, and he really showed me the way and showed me how much you can do in a community center. And he really was a big influence on me. And then I also recognize Dr. Goetz with at Mayo here too. So, I'm pretty new to the breast cancer leadership stuff in terms of taking on a co-chair role with a crew, and really admire the way he handles things. He brings such a level of, he gets things done. He executes things so efficiently, and his leadership has really been instrumental to my career to see how I would want to approach things from a research perspective, running clinical trials, managing. He's always been really sharp in terms of those interactions with me. So, I really appreciate his mentorship and then others along the way. But those were just a couple of folks that have helped me get where we are today.
On a personal note, I have to say that Matt has just been an amazing mentor to me too through the years and so many of us here at Mayo. So certainly echo all of those sentiments. So as it relates to paying it forward, you've done such an amazing job with things in St. Elizabeth and you've presented your work at a national level as it relates to how you kind of built this all from the ground up. Do you see that you could possibly be a mentor to other community oncologists striving to do the same for their practices as the years go by? Obviously, we're all so strapped for time and resources and energy. What are your thoughts on
that? Yeah, absolutely. I think that's so important. I've learned a lot over the last 5-6 years about clinical trials and our cancer centers. We're hiring a lot of new folks who are coming in right out of fellowship, and as we were expanding our cancer center, and some of them have been involved with research and others haven't. And I really think it's important is from day one to really help them and guide them in terms of all the educational things that they're going to need to get up to speed. Because I think once they get farther along in their career, they're going to realize that without things like research in your day-to-day, it's very easy to get burnout in oncology. The emotional toll it takes on you, right? So if you're seeing 20 patients a day, every day for 10 years without any sort of other things that drive you, kind of think about why we went into medicine in the first place. So I think, especially the newer fellows are right out of just graduating, I think would love to take on some of their research interests and show them how you can do research in a community setting, even investigator initiated trials. I mean, there's opportunities there. I didn't think you could do that, but we're already involved with a couple of those right now. So if they have ideas, we can do a lot of amazing things. So, and just really being enthusiastic about that, bringing a level of enthusiasm, I think, can really inspire people and giving them, not everybody's excited about research. To the fellow who's just graduating who wasn't involved, it can seem a little drab to some folks, but I think opening up their eyes a little bit to what opportunities we have is going to be key. And so, within our cancer center, but certainly also at a regional, national level, being a little bit more involved with the NCI, we participate in the Alliance, so among a couple of the committees with the Alliance, and then hopefully be able to mentor some other community researchers like myself.
I think, and that's what the accrue is all about, which I really love, sort of breaking down these sort of barriers, if you like, between academic and community research. And as you say, there's just like a a treasure trove of opportunities and patient populations in need of all of these, of these great ideas.
That's what a CRU is trying to do, right? Like if we look and see, I know some of the other recordings we've done is that talked about where did the CRU, how did the CRU evolve? And I think what really will differentiate a CRU from some of the other research networks is that it's really going to be that bridge between academics and community research. So if we can get more people involved, the academic folks really sharing their expertise in terms of maybe trial design, and then the community folks that can give input. I really think that any new study that started, whether it be at a CRU or elsewhere, should have a community oncologist on the designing and giving mm-hmm. input to these things, because there's so many logistical details I see on studies that just seem crazy to me that protocols are like, oh my gosh, this doesn't make sense for our patients in Kentucky who live hours away from the center, and transportation barriers, financial barriers. There's so many things that we could do better within research.
I noted that one of your interests is sort of breaking down barriers to clinical trial participation and sort of more inclusivity as it relates to rural participants and things like that. So you're right. All of these things are so important. And, one thing, I think a very important thing as it relates to, inspiring our fellows and burnout is just sort of kind of trying to introduce variety to work. And that's what research does, right? So just as you say, kind of having that mixture between excellent clinical practice, but also kind of using the brain in a slightly different way to kind of be involved in research projects, I think absolutely, as you say, can help prevent burnout and things like that. So
and I think it makes you a better doctor when you're involved with this stuff. So if you're too busy to step back and look at what's going on in your particular specialty, so by being a PI or even a sub-I on a study, you have to know your stuff, right? You're more up to speed with what's going on. So I think in addition to reducing burnout, it just makes you a better oncologist.
And on that note, we all know, right, that the oncology clinical practice side and research, all of it can be challenging, and clinical advances in our field are sometimes more incremental than we, and of course, our patients would like. So who or what inspires you? And can you tell us who or what has had the greatest professional influence on your career to date?
Again, cancer is very personal to me. I lost my mom to breast cancer when she was 43. I'm 46 now, and I realize I'm older than where my mom was. I have three kids. So, gosh, that really inspires me every day to do what I do, right? At that time, there wasn't a lot of things to treat breast cancer. We didn't even know about HER2 at that time. So I've just seen how much progress we've made over the last 20, 25 years. And so again, having that personal connection to me is really what inspires me to get up every day and think about how I can do a better job for our patients. Other personal connections, my brother also is an oncologist. He works at the cancer center. He's our executive director. Gosh, he's really, for me, been also, I should mention him as a mentor. He's taught me everything practical about oncology since I started. He showed me all the softer touches, the practical issues of taking care of cancer patients. So Doug's been really a huge influence on not only making me a better oncologist, but making me a better person. So I think those are kind of why I'm doing this, the motivation, and hopefully that translates into continuing to do better for our patients every day. And
I can imagine our patients sense that from you, and that you've got this mission, and so wonderful that you and your brother can have that shared professional interest in oncology as well. So that's really special. Thank you for sharing that. One thing I wanted to ask you as well, just on the topic of mentorship and kind of your own personal experiences. For our listeners out there who are possibly considering a career similar to yours, what is one thing you wish you had known when you began your career? And what advice would you give someone wanting to pursue a career similar to yours?
Going back a little bit, find a mentor early. I wish I had explored that when I was a fellow. Really, and some programs provide that automatically, but not every program does. And so if you can reach out, and ASCO has some really tremendous resources for that. So they have a mentoring program. I actually did this as an attending. So I kind of felt like I was the older guy in that crowd, but I participated in the ASCO mentorship stuff too. So that was a good experience for me. But getting involved early, finding someone who inspires you and really learning from them would have been something I wish I had done a better job of. I just didn't realize how important it would be for my career. I think the other piece of advice I would have given myself is just to slow down. And when you start oncology for that first 3 to 5 years, you're so excited to see as many patients as you possibly can and help as many people as possible. But I don't think that's always the best for your career and for your take best care of patients. So go to your leadership early in your first couple of years and ask for protected time. Even if you're at a busy cancer center and you're in the community or even out in the rural settings, I think it's something that we all deserve. If you can't stop and think about what you're doing, you can really get caught up in it. And I don't think that's the best for the patient. So I would say ask for protected time, at least a half day, if not a whole day, every week, just to be able to participate in things like clinical research or perhaps it's leadership. But find your thing that inspires you and pursue that in addition to the clinic and taking care of people.
And again, just on the note of staff turnover, trying to retain research staff, it's also important for us to retain our highly talented community oncologists. So on that note, what are strategies that you would recommend, or just in general, or what are things you do to combat burnout in your own personal practice?
I think we do a lot within our research programs, specifically a lot of educational things. So I love the idea of bringing in speakers, whether that be from academic centers or elsewhere, to keep us up to date on what's happening in the research world. So we're really focusing on trying to get an educational component for the doctors. So if we have nationally recognized speakers come into our cancer center and give their talks and trying to, again, inspire people to get more into that focus, I think that's one way to reduce burnout. Is really incorporating an educational piece into your. Personally, for me, I think things outside of medicine you have to do that keep you sane. So for me, I look to think, I'm a musician, and so I spend a lot of time doing things outside. You know, I know this recording is mostly about what we do with our research practice, but.
I want to know what your main instrument is. Have you got a band? Should I be asking for an autograph?
well, not quite yet. Yeah. So, I play guitar in a cover band and have done that for 4 or 5 years. And we play a lot of cancer benefits around the area. Okay. So we were able to, we looked a couple of years ago, we did a huge fundraiser for the cancer center. We raised about $25,000 by getting... It was called Bands Against Cancer. And again, that sort of relates to what we're talking about is find something you're passionate about, whether that be within your career or outside of your career, and run with it and take those opportunities to explore your passions. And that's been one way I kind of stay sane is by, stepping back a little bit and doing some of the other, other things. And family's huge. So don't forget about them. Set time aside for your family and spend the time with your loved ones so that you can reset before you go back to work.
I won't make you sing a song or play an instrument on the podcast today, but maybe next time, right? We'll give you some time to practice.
I think we have a music therapy program within our cancer center. So
also hugely important.
I think it's amazing. I mean, we have a singer-songwriter who goes up to the treatment suite. And literally I've been with her when she performs and it gives you chills. I mean, she's just amazing and the patients feel that. So I don't think those are the types of things I think can make a big difference. That's something that cancer patient will never forget when those types of things happen. So those are really things that are the softer touches of taking care of cancer patients. I think we could all do a better job of recognizing it's not just about what next chemotherapy drug or immunotherapy drug we're going to get, but really connecting with the patients in other ways too.
art therapy, animal therapy, music therapy, these things are just so amazingly impactful on quality of life for patients and their families and for providers and their teams too. So Dan, it's just been such a pleasure chatting with you today. I think we've covered a lot of ground. You're obviously doing amazing work in Kentucky. They're obviously so lucky to have you. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to discuss your career and other exciting things with us, and wishing you the very best for the future and hoping that we get to collaborate in the future on something. Yeah.
Thanks, Kira. This is really a great experience. Thanks for bringing me on, and hopefully we can collaborate on some projects in the future. I'd love to meet again. We'll hopefully be able to share some ideas.
That would be wonderful. Thanks, everyone, and have a great day. We appreciate our listeners, and thank you all for tuning in.